everyone in our country has a voice. It's something that says not just where you come from, but who you are. Welcome to NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of podcasts and a celebration of the hosts in journalism who've always spoken truth to power. Our voices are as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as the Black experience, and stories should never be about us without us. Find NPR Black Stories, Black Truths on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating.
I got a big heart, and I'm very forgiving, but, like, don't abuse it. It's been abused enough.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here at the Black Information Network, we know how important it is for you to start your week off energized, engaged, and enlightened. There are always major stories that break over the weekend, and we feel you should know about the ones we are talking about today. So stay tuned for our weekend recap featuring BIN News anchor Amber Payton. This is the Black Information Network Daily Podcast, and I am your host, Ramses Ja. All right, the one, the only Amber Payton. Welcome back to the show. How are you? I don't even have to ask how you're doing. I know you're doing fantastic today. I heard some great news about the goings on in your world. Please update our audience and you know me, because I'd love to hear it straight from the source.
Yes, well, I'm the assignment editor now for our AM team on BIN, so I'm curating everything that we hear, you know, in the actually the evening, so it'll run on the evenings. Listen, but I am excited.
Yeah That's called growth, man, and we loved it. Yeah. And it couldn't have happened to a better person or more qualified person. I'm really excited for you, and I'm looking forward to the personal touch that you bring to our senior editor team. Or our editing period, I guess, because you're the senior editor. So anyway, just a fantastic move. I'm really excited for you, and I'm really proud that this happened to you. Couldn't have happened to a better person. Anyway, let's give the people what they came for. Let's talk about the goings on over this past weekend. First up from NBCNews.com, a teenage gunman wounded 10 people when he opened fire early Sunday after fighting broke out during a private event at a Florida party venue, authorities said. A security guard tackled and disarmed the shooter almost immediately, and a second guard handcuffed him until sheriff's deputies arrived, according to an arrest report from the Seminole County Sheriff's Office. A 16-year-old suspect was arrested in the Florida case on Sunday and taken to a juvenile detention center. He was charged with attempted homicide, firing a weapon in a public place, using a firearm during a felony, and illegal possession of a firearm by a minor. The shooting happened during a crowded late-night event at Cabana Live in Sanford, about 20 miles north of Orlando. Witnesses told law enforcement the shooting started after a fistfight broke out. Someone who wasn't involved in the melee drew a handgun and began firing toward a crowd of people, the arrest report said. A security guard standing near the gunman wrestled him to the ground and disarmed him. So I know that this has been something we've been talking about here. Give us your thoughts on this story and how it's developed so far.
So my first thought, I always love giving you my initial thought after I read the story, and it has something to do with the story, but then I'm looking at the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. We are so focused on what I consider to be minuscule things, like shutting down TikTok, which I'm sure that, you know, they have valid reasons, but we're so focused on that a teen opened fire, a teenager had a gun in his hand, and he's so angry that he opened fire and he shot 10 people. Mm-hmm. Like, why are we not focusing on the mental health of the children? Why are we not focusing on gun reform? I hear a lot about gun reform, but then I don't see any action. I heard a lot about them wanting to get rid of TikTok, and I see the action very quickly, very swift action. Where's the action behind that?
Yeah. You know, there's this is a sad story, and I know that there's a lot of reasons that we get to this point over and over again in this country where we have to come to terms with these mass shooting type events. The short is that there's money in politics. There's a lot of money in politics. There's very powerful lobbyists and lobbies and, you know, special interests in our politics. And, you know, the founding fathers of this country, they just kind of backed us into a really weird corner. Once upon a time, the right to bear arms was so that people could arm themselves against a tyrannical government. And the arms that they were referring to were muskets, you know, enough to defend a home, you know, and, you know, fire, reload, that sort of thing.
Right.
At the time when this law was, you know, put into place. And so the essence of the law is now kind of null and void because a tyrannical government can obliterate your neighborhood, your city from the stratosphere with a drone. It's not the same. The government is not going to send troops, armed troops to your house to fight you that way. You know, it's not even the same thing. And then obviously the muskets are no longer the preferred, you know, arms of the masses. Right. Now they're rifles or automatic. Right. There's handguns that can, even a handgun, an automatic handgun can let off, you know, more devastating, destructive and lethal power than a team of muskets could, you know, back when, you know, the Bill of Rights was drafted. And so we're living in a different world. And because of the money and politics and the special interests and really smart people who are motivated by fear often enough, but money as well, there's no real incentive for them to change things because the people that are making money and the way the money's moving just kind of works to keep the powerful people in positions of power. We all know that. But the result of it is that situations like this happen with some frequency. Now, I don't know anything about the race of the student. I don't know anything about the background outside of the articles that have been reported. And since they're minors, we might not get those details. But, you know, this is not the traditional mass shooting type of event that we are accustomed to seeing, you know, with a person that has an automatic rifle going into a public place for the purpose of just hurting people. This is from what we're hearing in response to a fight. But it's still a mass shooting event, regardless of the race, regardless of the motivation. And the approach to dealing with it is largely the same. As you mentioned, mental health and accounting for the mental health of not just our children, but especially our children, but really all of the citizens of this country. And, you know, when people have mental health problems and access to firearms, they're going to hurt themselves or they're going to hurt other people. And that's what we're seeing over and over again. So I think you're absolutely right. This is just a sad way to start off, you know, the week, but it's definitely something that we have to report. So, so there you have it. In other news, this is from The Hill. Demonstrators are protesting media coverage of the Israel-Hamas war at this year's White House Correspondents Association dinner, attended by President Biden, top government officials and journalists who cover them. Protesters are criticizing President Biden's administration's handling of the Israel-Hamas war and mainstream media's coverage of the conflict. Chants of free, free Palestine and calls for a ceasefire can be heard near the Washington Hilton, where the dinner takes place, according to videos posted on social media. So this is another thing. This one's kind of a special one for us, you know, working as journalists and in the media space. You know, talk to us a bit about this one.
It is a special one for us because, and I hear this often, right, that media sometimes picks and chooses, you know, what stories to report, or they'll censor the news. I personally don't. I think over, you know, here at BIN, I think we report all of the news. I try to report all of the news as an anchor. But you do see it. It is true. Now you have these protesters who are wanting to essentially get rid of Israel while we're funding Israel, and they're not getting any answers. They're not getting any responses. Mm-hmm. The only thing that they're seeing is that they're seeing our continued support of Israel, mm-hmm. and so no one's speaking to them. And I think that just kind of goes back to what I originally said. You know, we're focused on all of this over here. There's a whole war going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we're not addressing it. And I think that if we addressed it, you know, maybe that would not silence the protesters, but maybe they wouldn't want to interrupt the correspondence dinner. Yeah. You know, maybe, you know, we just have to talk to them. But the media does. The media drives all of this. And so I think it really comes down to, you know, us being a trusted source.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that they're viewing all media as a trusted source right now.
And for good reason, you know, especially the traditional outlets. You know, one of the things that people have with these White House correspondence dinner is that it puts the media shoulder to shoulder with the people they're supposed to be critical of, the people they're supposed to be covering. And then they get all chummy. And as you mentioned, they report this and they underreport that, you know, and it a lot of people feel like it interferes with their capacity to provide fair and unbalanced news and reporting for the benefit of, you know, citizens and their readers and their consumers of the media product. And so, you know, that's one thing. You know, for me, and I've been very honest about this on this show, I do have a bias. I'm a biased individual. I live a biased life. I am a Black man. I walk in that Blackness. I experience the world as a Black man, and I have the sensitivities of a Black man. And I cannot offer you a perspective or an opinion that does not account for that. I don't believe that it is. If we're talking about social things in this country, it is not possible for me to divorce my Blackness and my maleness from my perspective. Now, if we're talking about humanity as a whole, I'm a human first. You know, I maintain I'm a human being first, and all men are my brothers, all women are my sisters. But, you know, when it comes to the types of things that we cover, there is a bias here. But my reporting, in my reporting of the news, I do my best to let everyone know, you know, this is who I am, this is how I report things. Yes. But also, you know, provide, if I can't provide a direct interview, I will provide, you know, a statement or something from the opposing side or the side that I may not be fully in alignment with, because it is important for people to feel like you don't have an agenda with respect to their opinion of what it is you're talking about. In other words, if people know that I have an agenda, not a bias, but an agenda, I want you to feel the way that I feel, right? If people feel that way, my belief is that my words will come across inauthentic. It will feel like I'm hiding something from them. And so what I do is I like to put everything on the table. Here's what everything is. Here's what I have found to be more significant for more of the people or involved, more of the time or whatever my take is. And here's the why. And here's what they think in response to that. And now you know what I know, right? And this is kind of how I've learned to cover things. I'm not a trained journalist. I'm a DJ and I'm a radio personality from a hip hop background. But, you know, in this space, that feels like the most authentic form of, you know, of reporting that I can provide. And so with that in mind, I will say that I, you know, for our newer listeners that may not know this, I am absolutely a protester. I was on the street at my college campus here. This might have been 2 or 3 days ago at the encampment, you know, where the tents were and the signs. I made a sign, you know, the Free Palestine, and I was walking around. And, you know, on this very show, I talked to pro-Israel supporters and I talked to, you know, pro-Palestinian, you know, journalists and reporters as well. And I try to have conversations that get to the bottom of everything that we need to know about. But, you know, insofar as I, Ramses, the Black man, as concerned, I feel like my sympathies lie more with the Palestinians and the Jews, because there was a lot of Jewish people out at my most recent protest, and indeed all of the protests I go to. My sensitivities do not lie with the nation state of Palestine at this point. Initially, yes, when they've taken it too far. You know, I was watching a video, out of all the videos I've seen of body parts getting picked out of rubble over the past however long, of these children and bow tie shoes and toys and arms and stuff. I saw there was a post from NBC. I shared it on my social media. It might have been taken down now, but it was from NBC. It was a little girl. She was born. Her mother, father, brothers, and sisters, they had all been killed in an airstrike. And they had to cut her from her pregnant mother. She was a little girl. It's just a newborn with all the newborn stuff all over her body. And they were carrying her, trying to save her. And she lived for about a week. It's hard for premature babies to live without their mother. She lived for about a week. And then there was another video that came out. I might have been yesterday, and she was not able to get enough oxygen, and she succumbed. So she had a very short week as an orphan on this planet, and I believe it might have been her grandmother was weeping inconsolably because the last, and when you think about how devastating a bomb is, how it just eradicates bloodlines indiscriminate. Yeah. And then you think about the narrative, well, Hamas shouldn't have done all of this stuff in the beginning. And then, you know, that story goes all the way back 100 years, and there's this, you know, and I get everyone has their perspective, but this is a very sad story. And I'm more inclined to side with the protesters, not the journalists. So shout out to the protesters. I salute you.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. People don't always realize just how much their negative thoughts and experiences stick with them and weigh them down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mom does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapist anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/BIN today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BIN.
Everyone in our country has a voice. It's something that says not just where you come from, but who you are. Welcome to NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of podcasts and a celebration of the hosts in journalism who've always spoken truth to power. Our voices are as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as the Black experience, and stories should never be about us without us. Find NPR Black Stories, Black Truths on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Delve into the visceral world of hip-hop with the Gangsta Chronicles, a podcast that aims to unravel the intricate tapestry of one of music's most influential and misunderstood subgenres, gangster rap. Hosted by MC8 and Big Steels every Thursday, each episode provides an in-depth exploration into the formative artists, monumental albums, and socio-political factors that have shaped gangster rap from its emergence in the 80s to its enduring impact today. Gangsta Chronicles unpacks the evolution of this uniquely American art form. We dive into the socio-cultural aspects that gangsta rap boldly addressed, from police brutality to systemic racism, offering listeners a comprehensive understanding of the profound cultural significance this genre holds. Listen to the Gangsta Chronicles on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's go.
BIN senior editor and news anchor Amber Payton is here with us discussing the weekend's major stories. All right. Next up from the Washington Examiner, Governor Brian Kemp, the Republican from Georgia, has signed a bill into law that aims to restrict any person under the age of 16's social media usage. The Georgia bill will require those under 16 to obtain parental consent before they can access social media company services. The platforms will decide how they obtain parental consent. The Protecting Georgia's Children on Social Media Act will require the Georgia Department of Education and local boards to, quote, adopt policies on social media, cyberbullying, and internet usage, unquote. This is a statement from the governor. Quote, we cannot continue to sit by and do nothing as young Georgians develop addictions and disorder and suffer at the hands of online antagonists, unquote. This is from Kemp, and he said this when he signed the bill on Tuesday. He added that the primary aim of the bill is to prevent cyberbullying and to nullify the negative mental health effects social media can have on the youth. So here's something. Here's at least someone. You know, I'm not a big fan of this guy, but, you know, some things, you know, at least in principle, I get what he's trying to do. You know, young people, their brains may not be developed, their self-image, their self-confidence, you know, they're especially vulnerable. Maybe this is a sensible thing. So, you know, credit where it's due. I don't hate these folks. So, you know, you give us your thoughts.
I'm 1,000% in support of it. So when I think of 16-year-old me, social media was barely a thing back then, right? But the only platform that I can remember that I was on at 16, I believe, was MySpace. And my mom was very strict about how often I could be up there. So never on a school night. It was really only Saturdays. And she limited my time to maybe 30 minutes. Yeah. You can't be exposed to too much in 30 minutes on MySpace, right?
Yeah.
But now when I look at this younger generation now, they have all of these options. They have Snapchat, they have X, they have Facebook, they have Instagram. And on these platforms, it's not the content up there is not appropriate for a 12-year-old, not all the time.
Yeah, that's
right. You know? And so I don't think that, I always call them these babies, and I say it like I'm 80 years old, but these young children, I don't think that they should have to be exposed to everything that's going on in the world. Or maybe even some of the things that they don't have a lot. Like X has no, you can post whatever on X and they don't take it down. Even if it's X rated. And there's no consent needed. Like you're 18 or over. There's none of that. Kids should just be kids, because if they get on social media and they see the videos like we were just talking about of babies and elderly and, you know, protesters, and not to say they will. It is, and it can be stressing, and we're already talking about protecting and preserving their mental health. Social media is not good for anybody's mental health, if I'm being honest with you. Like I have to take it in doses. So I am okay with letting a kid be a kid, go outside and touch some grass, go to the park with your friends.
Yeah.
Social media, and I think this one is under 16, I believe.
Yeah.
So when I think of a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 14-year-old, no, they shouldn't. They shouldn't be on social media. It's a cool place sometimes, but it's a cruel place sometimes too. It's another way for them to get bullied on social media, and we hear about that all the time too.
Yeah.
You know, if we're talking about protecting their mental health, one way to do that, like you say, you get credit when it's due. Yeah. One way to do that is to limit their access to social media. My mom did it for me, and I think I turned out okay.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like there's one of the things that I did is COVID. I taught my son, because, you know, they were going to school on the laptops, taught my son how to read. That was me and him, because he was 5 years old. It was kindergarten. He was didn't even know. He just sat there and that was it. You know, it wasn't really engaging. So I'm his father, taught him how to read. Year after that, he doesn't know how to ride a bike. I'm his father, teach him how to ride a bike. So, you know, now we have the capacity to get outside and touch some grass, quote unquote, you know.
Right.
But, you know, I'm his father. You know what I mean? I taught him how to cook. He washes his own clothes. He wakes himself up in the morning. He rides his bike to school and from school. You know, I'm raising a child that is going to have a real life, right? But yeah. Man, it is still tough to get away from those screens. You know what I did? Because he comes home, he does his homework, and then it's YouTube. Wants to be on YouTube and watch Minecraft, you know, all that. You know, anyone that has a younger kid knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So I says, okay, son, you know, we play instruments in this house. You know, I'm a music guy. So, son, I'm going to go buy you a guitar. You're going to learn to play the guitar. If you're going to be on YouTube, you're going to watch YouTube guitar tutorials. You're going to give me 30 minutes every day playing your guitar. And then you can watch the rest of your stuff. So
I love
restricting.
That.
So, thank you. So what we've done here is, I should say what I've done here, but he and I, what we've done is we've restricted the amount of, you know, I call it social media content because he does follow, he subscribes to these content creators. They do Fortnite. They do, you know, whatever else. The guys that scream at their TV while they're playing a video game, those guys. Anyway, so we just restrict the content. He has some of it at, you know, some time, and the rest of it, it's going to be constructive for him. And I think that for people that are not able to be as involved as I am with my son, I have a, you know, I make enough money to be able to raise my sons, you know. And for people that aren't in the same position, you know, having restrictions like this, I think it's at least it's not nothing. So, you know, I'm not a fan of the politics in Florida, Louisiana, Texas, Utah, you know, but they all have similar measures on the books saying that, hey, we need to do something about this. And, you know, again, credit where it's due. We'll see how it goes. I'm not fully bought in. It might backfire, right. Might be the worst thing in the world, but I think in principle and what at its essence, what it's trying to do is protect people. And you know, they still have enough time to, you know, between 16 and 18 to get involved on TikTok or whatever platforms,
right.
Get politically engaged, understand enough of the politics when their mind is a little bit more mature. And then by the time they're old enough to vote, they will have tapped into their silos and be able to decide what the what is. And so it's not like you can't do it until you're 18. Is, you know, 16 is that's
16 is good.
Yeah, that's good. And you're
one last thing.
Yeah, go
ahead. We're talking about giving credit when it's where it's due. Mm-hmm. Got to give credit to you too, because you aren't just, you know, cutting his access from social media. You embraced it.
Yeah,
and I've said this to you before, like, we live in a world now where AI is becoming a thing. You can either not become a thing with it, because and that's one thing that I say all the time. You know, the world is going to continue to grow. Technology will continue to grow, either grow with it or you get left behind.
There it is.
And so I think that it's amazing that you are embracing it, but for his good.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it's all there. You know, I'm not writing any books over here. It's just having the time. And this is one of the things that I want to offer to our audience is that, you know, having time, I think that a lot of people's natural impulses and inclinations would be to spend that time. If you have children, with your children, you know, if you think about the final moments of your life, what is the most important person you could be with, hang out with, whatever, then you start to whittle down who really matters to you.
Right.
And when you think about the people that will come to your funeral, my sons are going to carry my coffin. And so they'll be the last people to hold me above this earth. So, you know, they're very important to me. And I happen to have enough time and resources to be able to spend time with them. And I realize that that's not true across the board. Everybody's working to get to the point where they have their time back so that they can spend their time the way that they want and not have to worry about whether or not they have a roof and the capacity to provide for their children. And so I don't want my story to make anyone feel like they're not doing right by their kids or anything like that. You know, kids are very resilient, and as long as they feel loved frequently enough, I think that we're going to be okay. But I think that everyone on some level is striving for the same reality that I've been fortunate enough to be able to lean into. My older son, I was still working. I didn't get to spend the same type of time with him. I do now, of course, but he's 18. So we're going to go buy him his prom tux, I think, tomorrow night. So, you know, it just looks a little different now, but you know, we got to the point where we can do things like that. He's going to take the Corvette and with his date and do his thing. So, you know, have fun, son. Enjoy yourself. Be great. All right. Our final story, and we'll let everyone get back to their lives. This comes from Fox9.com. The Minnesota Supreme Court put an end to the practice of using the odor of marijuana as a justification to search stopped vehicles late last year when it ruled that the smell of marijuana alone is no longer enough to search someone's car. After that ruling, the Fox 9 investigators analyzed police video evidence files and court records that highlight how policing is fundamentally changing in Minnesota. Law enforcement training programs are already adapting, and at least one instructor predicts it will lead to fewer vehicle searches. So this is something that I know a lot of activists and protesters really were looking to have implemented. And Minnesota is about as progressive of a place in terms of their politics as I've heard of. In recent years, of course. And so I think that this is a fantastic thing. Let's get your thoughts, though.
I think it is, too. And so so here's the thing. You know, there are certain stories where I feel like I have limited opinions on because I've not been exposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so I can't really speak from experience, but I can say that, you know, I think this is a good move for Minnesota.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Well,
I have not, but so when I say I haven't been exposed to it, I haven't been in the situation where I've never been pulled over before.
Oh,
yeah. So knock on wood. Yeah. So that's not been an experience that I can really speak that I can speak to. So mm-hmm. I'm not always comfortable speaking on it because I can't relate. I've read the stories. I know that when it comes to marijuana, which is also something that I've never experienced. I know that when it comes to marijuana, you know, everybody just somehow, whether you're smoking it or, you know, edibles or whatever, just from what I've seen on social media, I know that people say, you know, that's just another excuse, right? To go in their car and to find something to get them on. So, you know, I think this is a good move for Minnesota, and I'll just leave my.
No, that's okay. I got something for you. I think you might like this. So I have never in my life drank alcohol. I have never in my life smoked anything, a cigarette, nothing. I've never done a drug. I'm not even really a big fan of like the drugs that the doctors give you after you have a surgery or something. And I'm generally pretty healthy, so I don't have to. But if I have a headache, I'm going to drink some water and lay down. I don't need to take nothing. It, you know, my body's designed to fix itself. So this is me, right? I've never put anything in my body that could be considered like a mind altering or anything like that. Q, my co-host on Civic Cypher, same thing. Same exact thing. Never drank alcohol in his life. Never did a drug, smoked any, none of that, right? I think on some level, we both knew that we were Black at a young age and that, you know, the consequences of living a full life are more, they're harsh when you live a full Black life. So, yeah. So Q and I were on a road trip. We're coming back from Florida. We're in Mississippi. We get pulled over. Neither one of us. In a brand new car, by the way. We went there to buy a Porsche. He bought a Porsche for his woman. We're driving it back. We get pulled over in the middle of the night on a country road somewhere in the outskirts of Mississippi, right? We get pulled over for really no reason. There was no reason, but they pulled us over. Immediately could tell that we were not under the influence of anything. It was a little swerve thing, you know, how they have the lines in the road that makes right. noise, like the rumble strips. So, you know, when you're changing like a song or something, the car might drift a yes. bit, but only for a second, right? So they pull you over, pull you out of the car, or they pull you over and they say, hey, have you been drinking anything like that? Nope, sorry, we're just doing this. No one's hurt. It's the middle of the night. There's no one even out here. Mistake, you know. But police are like, oh, well, why don't you step out of the car? Well, clearly I'm not inebriated. And that's the reason that you chose to investigate this, right? Not inebriated. You can see that. You can hear it in my voice. I'm very coherent. My passenger, Ramses, is coherent. Pull us out of the car. Long and the short of it is we're on the side of the road for hours. They bring out the drug dogs. They sniff the car. They take the car apart on the side of the road. They're looking for the drugs. Neither one of us has ever touched a drug in our lives. Now imagine if I happen to have, I don't know, something in my car that might not have been as legal in the state of Mississippi as it would have been in Alabama or Georgia, where we were coming from that day. Or imagine if I had been agitated enough to, and frustrated enough to, you know, demand my dignity, and then they escalate it, you know, or whatever. You know, we've seen how these things, you don't have to be doing anything wrong. So that's why I'm trying to tiptoe around this. But now imagine if, I don't know, I have something that I purchased and it happened to be stolen. And now they have a reason to arrest me and interrogate me and see what else I'm on the hook for, right? So this maneuver in Minnesota is more of a response to the over-policing of Black people and Black bodies. It's not fair. Now watch this. If I had been a 65-year-old white man traveling with my wife in our new car, you know, on the outside, would they have gotten the drug dogs and had us handcuffed and bent over the front of police cars? No. Of course not. Right. So the over-policing of Black bodies is what this is a response to. I say kudos to Minnesota. I say everybody should do it. You know, marijuana has never hurt anybody. And all it's done negatively is put Black people in prison. So that's that. We'll leave it right there. Don't forget, these and more stories can be found at BIUnews.com. I'd like to thank you, as always, for your time, your insight, your brilliance, and your perspective. Once again, today's guest is BIN senior editor. Congratulations again. And news anchor Amber Payton. This has been a production of the Black Information Network. Today's show is produced by Chris Thompson. Have some thoughts you'd like to share? Use the red microphone talkback feature on the iHeartRadio app. While you're there, be sure to hit subscribe and download all of our episodes. I'm your host, Ramses Ja, on all social media. And join us tomorrow as we share our news with our voice from our perspective, right here on the Black Information Network Daily Podcast.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Everyone in our country has a voice. It's something that says not just where you come from, but who you are. Welcome to NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of podcasts and a celebration of the hosts in journalism who've always spoken truth to power. Our voices are as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as the Black experience. And stories should never be about us without us. Find NPR Black Stories, Black Truths on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating.
I got a big heart, and I'm very forgiving, but, like, don't abuse it. It's been abused enough.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me. You won't want to miss this one.